Good morning, and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book Study. My name is Mo H., and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater from Northern California. Today is Tuesday, October the 9th. This is the 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting. Today we are reading from the Big Book, and we are on page 134, starting with the first paragraph, A Word About Sex Relations, through three paragraphs, ending with, Often Follow Such a Reunion. And the comments will be on all those paragraphs. And today's readers are the 12 Steps, Laura A., the 12 Traditions, Nan K., and the readers of the text are Nareya K., Eileen M., and Sherry K.B. And the share ID for Monday, October the 8th, the 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting is 12,014. That's 12014. And for this morning's meeting, Tuesday, October 9th, 7 a.m. Eastern Time meeting is 12,018. That's 12,018. And our newcomer greeter will be Melanie C. The OA Preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At A Vision for You Big Book Study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. And I will now ask Laura A. to read the 12 steps. Thank you, Laura.
Hi, this is Laura A., recovered compulsive overeater in New Hampshire. The 12 steps. 1. We admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. 4. Made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5. Admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6. We're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7. Humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. 8. Made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9. Made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10. Continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thanks for letting me do service. I pass.
Thank you, Laura A., and I will now ask Nan K. to read the 12 traditions.
Hi, I'm Nan K., a recovered compulsive overeater. The 12 traditions. Number 1, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. 2, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3. The only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4. Each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5. Each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6. An OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7. Every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8. Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9. OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues. Hence, the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. 12. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Pass.
Thank you, Nan Kay. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year, and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you are done sharing, let us know by saying pass. Then press star 1 to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker's should be muted. And today we resume our study, and we are reading from the Big Book. We are on page 134, starting with the first paragraph, a word about sex relations, through 3 paragraphs, ending with, often follow such a reunion, and the comments will be on all 3 paragraphs. And I will now ask Nereya K. to get us started.
Can you hear me?
I can, Nereya.
Thank you. This is Nereya K., recovered compulsive overeater in Moscow. A word about sex relations. Alcohol is so sexually stimulating to some men that they have overindulged. Couples are occasionally dismayed to find that when drinking is stopped, the man tends to be impotent. Unless the reason is understood, there may be an emotional upset. Some of us have had this experience, only to enjoy, in a few months, the finer intimacy than ever. There should be no hesitancy in consulting a doctor or psychologist if the condition persists. We do not know of many cases where this difficulty lasted long. The alcoholic may find it hard to reestablish friendly relations with his children. Their young minds were impressionable while he was drinking. Without saying so, they may cordially hate him for what he has done to them and their mother. The children are sometimes dominated by a pathetic hardness and cynicism. They can't seem to forgive and forget. This may hang on for months, long after their mother has accepted Dad's new way of living and thinking. In time, they will see that he is a new man, and in their own way, they will let him know it. When this happens, they can be invited to join in morning meditations, and they can take part in the daily discussions without rancor or bias. From this point on, progress will be rapid. Marvelous results will often follow such a reunion. Again, Nereya, compulsive overeater in Moscow. The first two paragraphs I can't really relate to because during most of my disease, I've been single and rejecting any companionship from anyone whatsoever, and I definitely don't have children or a husband. But in the third paragraph, where it talks about kind of the relationship with the family, I don't have children, but I know that my relationship with my cousins, with my nieces, with my nephews, that all of that has improved. And it wasn't based on when I said, oh, I'm ready, I'm better, look at me. It was something that with time and with my recovery, they saw it in me, and they started asking, and they started approaching me. And what it says, from this point on, progress will be rapid. In my case, that's what it is. And some of the people that I hurt and alienated in my disease, now are some of my biggest advocates. And, you know, they're people that I can turn to and that turn to me if they need things. And, you know, to have that kind of relationship is something that I never thought I was possibly able to have with my family. I had just kind of given up and assumed that I would be a nomad and a hermit and, you know, that I would be alone forever without support. And, you know, it's the big book said, if you work these steps, if you do this, it will happen. And in this paragraph, you know, they saw it and they approached me. And now we have wonderful discussions and a wonderful relationship. So thanks to everybody. And with this, I pass.
Yeah, thank you, Nureya K, for getting us started. I will now remind everybody we're on page 134, A Word About Sex Relations, reading through three paragraphs, ending with, "Results often follow such a reunion." And I will now take names of those who would like to share this morning.
Mary Jane Z.
Mary Jane Z. Thank you. Anyone else?
Laura A.
Laura A.
Wendy N.
Wendy M.
Nancy L.
Is that Lucy?
Nancy.
Oh, Nancy. Sorry, Nancy. Nancy L. Couple more.
Randy B.
Was that Randy?
Marilyn P.
Marilyn P. Didn't get the person's name before Marilyn T. Let me see if somebody else got it. No.
Kristen R.
Kristen R. We'll stop there.
DB.
Sherry KB.
Kristen R. And we'll stop with Sherry KB. Okay. I have Mary Jane Z, Laura A, Wendy M, Nancy C, and I think it was a Randy. Could have been a Nancy, another Nancy, another Sandy. Marilyn T, Kristen R, and Sherry KB. Okay, Mary Jane, get us started, followed by Laura A.
Good morning, Mo. Can you hear me?
I can.
All right. Good morning, my fellows. Mary Jane Z. I'm driving, so you might lose me, but
okay.
I'll give it a shot. I couldn't stand the silence, so I had to share on this uncomfortable subject, of which I know nothing about, even though I've been married 30 years. This is Mary Jane Z, anyway, let's see. You know, I've been married 3 times, so you'd think I'd be an expert. But this last time go around, it's 30 years. And I got married in my 30s, and the call for children was so great. It was like, I've got to get married. I've got to get pregnant. Oh, let me make my children my higher power and my most important priority. And what? Why do you want to have sex anymore? We have kids. I got what I wanted. So I proceeded to live out my life that way for the next 15, 20 years. And boy, self-will run riot, selfishness, inconsiderate. And, you know, then aging happens. And, you know, my husband became ill. And as a result, things happened. So intimacy was not possible, and I was relieved, and I didn't even understand how selfish that was until after working these steps. And you know, then I had to grieve what I didn't pay attention to for 20 something years. And another awakening I had once I put the food down was I was looking at litter one day. And I realized there's no way I could litter No way. There's no way I could roll down that window and toss out any litter. But boy, I sure thought about other men a lot. And I could toss out my relationship with my husband quicker than a New York minute. If given the right circumstances, I did it two other times. And, if, you know, it's just a last marriage. Nobody seemed interested. But if they would have been, I would have jumped right on the bandwagon probably. I don't know, you know. But, you know, I had to look at that. And that also caused me to get some outside help because it became clear that, there's something else going on here. I was sexually abused as a child. And I had to look at that and how that informed how I related to men. And there's been a lot of healing with that also. And so now we just celebrated 30 years of marriage, and there's a lot of other things you can do in intimacy that doesn't actually require the sexual act.
Fine.
And I'm open and learning. So there's hope out there. Hang in there. Thank you, I pass.
Thank you, Mary Jane Z. Laura A., followed by Wendy M.
Hi, this is Laura A. Can you hear me?
I can.
Okay, let me. This is Laura A., recovered compulsive overeater in New Hampshire. And, boy, these paragraphs have really struck me. When I used food to numb me out to the feelings that arose when I was intimate with people, conversations as well as, you know, sex. And boy, when I put the food down, oh my gosh, so much came up. And I, you know, uncovered, or actually my husband said, you know, hey, something else is going on here. And I had then to, you know, seek outside counsel about some series of sexual abuse issues. And so it's been a real journey for the two of us to try to develop an intimate relationship in terms of that, but in terms of sex, but also in terms of really being able to, for me, to look at, you know, be open up with my feelings and things like that. And you know, now also, too, I'm a woman of a certain age, and so there are some physical things now that are happening. And understanding that and being open and willing to try to figure out what can be done or not done, or just figuring out ways to be intimate and open and honest with my husband, and then also to be intimate with my family members. You know, we've got a bunch of nieces and nephews, and now they're starting to have children, and just ways to be free and with, you know, affection, physical affection in terms of hugging and, you know, stuff like that, that for me was not always safe. And I had to shut down an awful lot. And being in recovery, you know, putting my alcoholic foods and drinks down has really exploded a lot of those terrorizing, you know, feelings, and working through them through this process of the 12 steps and getting some outside help, as well as, you know, doing 10 steps when these feelings arise and things like that, have made all the difference in the world. And I'm so grateful each day that I'm making progress with this and just becoming another bozo on the bus. And thanks for letting me share. I pass.
Thank you, Laura A. Wendy M., followed by Nancy L.
Yes, good morning. It's Wendy M., gratefully recovered in Boulder, Colorado. Moderator, thank you for your service and everyone on the line. So, you know, I didn't want to raise my hand and show up this morning for this passage, right? Because I don't have a great record when it comes to relationships. I mean, that's why I'm on the line right now with all of you. But the good news is things are changing, and the good news is I am different. It's not the best, but it's better and it's different. And I first want to say, you know, I put the food down, you know, entirely. I was entirely abstinent about 2.5 years ago. But that doesn't mean anything in terms of how I treat people, right? I can put the food down and be a nutcase, which I was for the first 15 years in my marriage and as a mother. You know, and there's just so much dishonesty. I'm a big user. That's where I come from, is how can I use you for my own selfish gains? And, you know, we don't even know what we don't know. And I got married because I was 39 and wanted a baby, and I wanted a ring on my finger. I wanted to belong to something, but I didn't get married to anybody that I loved. You know, I was just using the situation for my own ends, you know, and I would do things like flirt in front of my husband at parties, real inappropriate act like that. I never slept with anybody, you know, outside the marriage. And, you know, I made love to the food, you know. I was not in an intimate relationship at all. And then the paragraph about the child is even more difficult to look at, right? My kid would be in the back seat, maybe 2 years old, in his little seat, whatever those seats are called. And I would crank up the music and scream at him like bloody murder. That was the hardest amends I had to make when I made it to my son. He's now 13. You know, and today the difference today is now I see when I'm selfish, because I'm not perfect, right? It's not like I used to be selfish with him, or I'd be uptight about something and then put it on him. No, you know, I still am, but the difference is I see it immediately and I make amends immediately, and my behavior is changing. And the good news, because there has to be some good news here, is that I'm now putting my child first. I just finalized a divorce, and so when I have him, instead of putting him on the back burner, I put him on the front burner and say, let's play Dungeons and Dragons, and let's take you to the film Venom. And then after that, let's play charades. And, you know, just, it's so different right now. And he's laughing, and we love each other, and we don't have to go to therapy together because we're laughing, we're playing games, and I'm putting him first. What's best for him? Because for me, all of this is about relationship ideals. What's my parenting ideal? How do I want to show up for this 13-year-old man? How do I want to show up for myself? What's my ideal to myself? You know, I'm currently in an intimate relationship with a boyfriend, and how do I want to show up for him? Dear God, show me how to show up for another human being. Because my go-to is selfish and using, and my, you know, the ideals is what, you know, God intends for me in terms of how I want to love these people. Thanks so much for letting me share.
Thank you, Wendy M. We have Nancy L. followed by Brandy M. Nancy.
Good morning. Hi, this is Nancy L. in Arizona. Thank you for your service and welcome newcomers. In time they will see, they meaning the family. The other sentence, seeing is believing to most families who have lived with a drinker. Well, my kids were grown and gone when I found recovery. And so my husband has experienced this new person, this new wife. And she's far from perfect, but boy, I'll tell you that topsy-turvy life I used to live, you know, I'd be so kind and happy when I thought my diet was working. And then when it didn't, I was just the Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde type mom and wife. So the thing about seeing, this is, okay, the children moved far away and had their families. They went into the military, both of them. And so we don't see them very often, but we do send pictures. And once in a while, we do get together. And so I think what I'm trying to convey here is what they see in me is a thin mother. They don't see a mom with 100 pounds of extra weight hanging on her body and a big scowl on her face. They see a thin, happy, healthy mother in the photos, in the Facebooks. And I just hope and pray that as I do relate to them on our few visits that we have, that they are seeing that I'm becoming loving and acceptable and soft for a change and not demanding. You know, all the things the big book says can happen have happened to me. I'm so very grateful for that. And I just pray that someday they'll be more loving back to me if they want to be. I'm not going to make it. I'm not going to try and push at all. And with that, I'll pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Nancy L. Brandy M., followed by Marilyn T. Brandy.
This is Randy B., I think it might have been.
Oh, sorry. Randy, yes, gotcha. Randy B., okay.
Great. I'm so happy to be on the line today, and thank you, everyone, for your service. I'm really grateful, recovering compulsive overeater in Washington State. And when I read the line, in time they will see that he is a new man, and in their own way they will let him know it. You know, I get really emotional thinking about my own kids and the way that I treated them, because I saw my kids in a new light as I recover long before they ever saw me in that new light, because there had been a lot of damage done. You know, but slowly as I recover, you know, there's less screaming, there's less spanking, there's less anger, there's a lot less tension. You know, and we can feel the difference, because as time goes on, there's more listening, there's more understanding, there's more kindness in our relationship. But I had to show them that there was a change in me, and not just for one day. You know, I had to prove to them that I was going to be sober for many days. So through showing them, you know, I feel that trust and that forgiveness start to heal. But it does take time. You can't just recover for one day and then expect everyone around you that you love in those intimate relationships to see that. And thank you so much for letting me share. With that, I pass.
Thank you, Randy B. Oh, sorry we got your name mixed up. Marilyn T., followed by Kristen R.
Was that my turn? This is Marilyn T.
Yes, it is your turn, Marilyn.
Okay. It's that mute, can't hear what's going on
that
there.
That moment,
okay.
Yes.
Yeah, so it's like, I don't know if that's me or not. Okay, This is Marilyn T. from Northern California, grateful, recovered, compulsive overeater. So things that this kind of brought up, not necessarily applying now, but what I can remember is that being overweight and in a relationship where you don't feel attractive, and so that in turn you withhold personal relationships with your significant other. And I can remember that. I can remember that feeling. It's like we're always waiting for that best point in our life where we're going to be more a better person, more intimate, more this, more that. There's never a better time as far as I'm concerned. It's just you need to be a living amends with this program. And that's what I get out of this big book. And in these pages of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, is I get how to have better relationships everywhere. Specifically, they're talking about sex relationships, relationships with children. And, you know, again, it's what I did not know was how to have any sort of an intimate personal relationship with anybody. That is what this disease takes away from you. It takes away that really being present with somebody and connecting with them and listening to them and being of service to them. That is the real thing that I have seen change in my life. I'm able to be more intimate in a relationship with anyone. That includes my family of origin. That includes my friends. I am not in a intimate relationship with someone else right now. But you know what it is even being in an intimate relationship with yourself, it being in touch with your higher power, being kind to yourself, connecting all the time, working the program, just being kind, loving, and tolerant. I just really don't know how to describe it. Also, the relationship with my son, I feel, is really improved for myself. He has been in a 12-step program as well as myself, and I am very thankful for that. And he just recently was telling me I have injured myself. So his little note today at 6:30 a.m. was, I hope we have limited our injuries this week. And then he also scores the injuries. We have this great relationship now that I'm not sure either one of us had when we were using, either one of us. But now it is a more connected one. How can I make you laugh? How can I give you joy? How can I give you kindness? And, you know, that is priceless. A mother's heart is just, this is what this program has given me. It's given me a softer heart, a kinder heart,
a more compassionate heart. And thank God.
Time.
Thank God for this program. And that's it. I pass. Perfect timing. Bye.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Marilyn T. We have Kristen R. followed by Sherry KB. Kristen?
Thank you, Mel. Thank you for your service. Good morning. My name is Kristen R. I'm a compulsive overeater in Virginia. And I appreciate all the shares this morning, and particularly this reading about the kids not getting the memo immediately about mom's great recovery or dad's great recovery. Over the weekend, I was driving the car with my son, and that morning he had been listening to me talk on the phone with a sponsee, and I started to correct him about something, and he said, "You know, Mom, I wish you could talk to me the way you talked to that woman on the phone." He's 9, by the way. And, you know, I was so hurt. I was hurt because I thought, don't you see? You're 9. You're supposed to know that mommy's changed and different. But what I've realized is I haven't been changed and different with my kids. And I don't think I've been somewhat changed and different with my husband. And I think the reason is I haven't surrendered my kids. I haven't surrendered my marriage to God. I haven't recovered in that way, in that emotional sobriety towards them, because I can be fantastic with a newcomer. But once I'm in relationship, you know, I struggle. And, you know, it's so amazing how this program works, because even though I was initially hurt, I still knew enough to pause. I knew, okay, just pause. You know, and don't say, "You have no idea how hard mommy's working to be different, blah, blah, blah." He's 9. He's not going to understand any of that. He's going to understand how I am, what the energy is around me. And so, you know, this program is so wonderful because I get another chance. I get another chance to do it differently today and to work on my emotional sobriety and realize that I have made, in particular my son, my firstborn, my higher power. That's why I can't surrender him, because I think he's God. And I need him to be emotionally well so that I can be emotionally well. And when he's not, and by the way, he's got huge anxiety, I can't imagine why, you know, then I'm not. And I blame him. And last night I was blaming him for how I was acting towards my husband. And I was blaming my husband for how my son was acting. And I was full of blame and resentment and fear. And I'm just grateful. I'm so grateful today for this program, for a second chance, for all of the fellows who reached out and helped me and very gently told me the truth. Because nothing helps me more than honesty. And because honesty is directly from God, directly from my higher power. And that's it. That's all I have to share. I really appreciate you being here today. Thank you. I pass.
Thank you, Kristen R. Let me remind everybody before Sherry KB where we're at. We're on page 134, starting with the first paragraph, a word about sex relations, and going through 3 paragraphs, ending with results often follow such a reunion. And now I'll ask Sherry KB to share.
Good morning, Mo. Good morning, everybody. Sherry KB in Northern California. Very grateful, recovered compulsive air reader. Thanks so much for your service, Mo, and everybody on the line. You know, I've been listening to everybody, and I keep thinking about that word intimacy. And, you know, I just know that there's no way that I could have been intimate when I was in the food with anybody, but I didn't think that. I was more intimate with the food than I was with people. I didn't even realize that until I did the work in the steps in this book. Definitely did not realize that. I thought that... you know, being loving and helping, you know, and telling my loved ones what to do was being loving towards them. And I realized that, you know, helping is the sunny side of control. And my distorted thinking, you know, blocked my intimacy, just like the food blocked my intimacy. And so today I definitely have a pause button. And living in 10, 11, and 12 makes a difference. And today God and I, you know, work on my relationships together, and they're so much better. because being in the disease caused so much of my distorted thinking, and I didn't know that till I did the steps. So, you know, to sit there and turn the food into my higher power, how crazy-making was that? But when I was in it, I didn't think so. I didn't realize I was doing that and that I was putting the food before all my relationships. I did not realize that. And I just, you know, life isn't perfect, but, you know, I have a skill set laid at my feet that I pick up every day and I use, and it makes my relationship so much better. Yeah, I'm just grateful for that. And I do invite my loved ones in for meditation. And, you know, I don't make it a big deal, but if they join me, they do, and if they don't, they don't. I just didn't realize being face down the food was causing so much non-intimacy in my relationships with people and my loved ones. And just the difference today, because I thought it was all about them. I didn't realize that it was a lot about me, and I didn't even think that my food was destroying my relationships because I saw other substances going on that I thought it was all their fault. And I was like the queen of blame. I didn't say it to you directly, but I sure thought it internally. And so, you know, God's removed that from me because I always get to look at my part in things. I ask myself, where did I get the ball rolling? And, you know, God helps me with that. And living in these steps helps me with that. And I'm just thank God for this program with that I passed. Thank you.
Thank you, Sherry B. Perfect timing. I will now open the lines up for more shares.
Grace L.
Grace
Eileen
L.
M.
Eileen M.
Wait.
Who was after Eileen M?
Linda G.
Linda G.
Hi, Christine M.
Christine.
Suzanne B.
We'll stop there. Christine
M.
And who was the last person?
Jan B.
Jan B. Okay. I may have a couple of initials there wrong. Grace L, Eileen M, Linda G, Christine. My last initial may be wrong there, Christine. Jan M. Grace L.
Hi, this is Grace L, a compulsive overeater out of British Columbia. And I don't have any kids, but these passages just made me think a lot about my relationship with my boyfriend and my relationship with others. And one thing in particular that I thought about was once in my boyfriend's apartment, he was walking around barefoot in the mudroom, and he got stung by a dead hornet right on his foot. And, you know, he screamed and he ran to the bathroom. And like, of course, I ran out and I saw him and I asked him, are you okay? And he was like, oh, no, I just got stung by a bee. And for some reason, my mind, my selfish mind just focused on it for 2 seconds. And then it was like ready to move on. And I remember I changed the subject to something about myself. And he just gave me this look like, what the hell? Like, you can't spare like 2 moments of sympathy for me. And he like rightly got mad at me. And I remember being really crushed. And here's what I realize a lot more now is that, and the kicker is that I wasn't even crushed because I regretted my actions. I was crushed because he was mad at me, and because I had upset him, and because when I upset him, that made me feel bad. Not because I was really sorry, but because I need other people's approval. And I'm just realizing that so much more now in this program that my first, and now that I'm trying to turn my will and my life over to God and take that pause that, you know, the other day, like my brother just gave me like an extension cord to use. And my first reaction wasn't thank you. It was just like, all right, good. And I had to pause and be like, and think, what is the unselfish thing to do here? Like, And my first instinct wasn't to, you know, thank him and be grateful. It was just to accept it and not think about him. And so when I first came to this program, I was just so focused on myself and what it could do for me and my misery and I need to gain sanity over my eating. But I'm thankful that this program has opened my mind a little bit to how I'm impacting others and the selfishness aspect of this disease that I really didn't even, that I hadn't even given a second thought, that I didn't think was related at all and that I didn't even realize was a problem. So I'm just grateful to be here, and I'm grateful that I have this program to show me how to be a better person and how to help others. So thank you very much, and I'll pass.
Thank you, Grace L. Eileen M., followed by Linda G. Eileen.
Hey, good morning. This is Eileen M., recovered in New Hampshire, and so grateful to be hearing everybody on the line. It's when I first started reading this morning, I thought, oh, I can't relate to this at all. But, you know, when I apply it to my current relationships, it really does apply to me. I have never been married. I don't have any children. I'm 55, and I've never even lived with a partner for more than a month or two. So I really have, I'm very naive in this whole area and very inexperienced. But, you know, when I started this recovery process, I had just moved in with this guy that I had been dating for a year. And, you know, it's amazing because it's just, you know, when we put down the food and we recover, it's like that's when the real work begins. And the real work of, you know, showing up for the other person and being emotionally available. And I have just learned so much doing this 10-step process every day. It's just really been mind-blowing because it's just an enlightening process. It's like I see so much about myself, you know, that did not work for me in the past. And, you know, one of the things was I had a lot of relationships in my life, but I was always afraid to let people get too close to me because I was afraid of being found out. You know, I thought they were going to find out something and they were going to be out the door, you know, in a New York minute, actually. I love that expression. And just, you know, doing this 10th step, like one of the first things I learned was that, you know, I learned about how withholding my feelings and ideas is a form of dishonesty. And I didn't know that. You know, I just would not talk about feelings because I was afraid of the other person's reaction. So I would just withhold everything. And, you know, I've just learned so much by just taking a risk and doing that. And, you know, it's been, I don't know, so much better. My life's been so much better by taking that risk. And, you know, one of the things that's been going on, there's certain things that I want out of this relationship that I'm not getting. And, you know, I get to learn about patience and tolerance of this other person because, you know, it used to be is my old MO would be, okay, I'm not getting what I want, so I'm out of here. I'm leaving. I'm moving somewhere else. I'm not going to talk to this person again, you know, and I've learned to like hang in there and kind of, you know, just be patient. And, you know, I'm really amazed that this relationship is working. I've never really been successful at relationships with men at all. And this one is actually working pretty well, I mean, so far. And it's, you know, I have to kind of walk each day with my higher power through this relationship and ask for help of how to show up to be a good partner. And lastly is just, you know, for so many years, I made other people my higher power, especially men. Oh, my God. I just looked up to them as they have all the answers, you know. They have the answer I need, you know. And that never worked. So anyway, I'm very grateful, and thank you, and I pass.
Thank you, Eileen M. Linda G., followed by Christine. I'm not sure about your last initial, Christine. Linda G. first. Press star 1 to unmute, Linda.
Morning. Linda G. from Massachusetts, recovering compulsive eater, working the steps with a vision sponsor. This is a very, very, very interesting reading for me. The sex relations, I got married. I was in another program. I went into another program 38 years ago where I met my now husband, and I had not worked the steps, and within 2 years had gotten married. I was 30 years old. Honestly, I don't think I knew what I was doing. And I discovered on my honeymoon that my partner just had no interest in any kind of intimacy. And so to make a long story short, with a lot of trauma in my background that I'm realizing now, what I do for my survival skill with this situation was I just ate and put this protective layer around me and gained 180 pounds because I just wanted, I didn't want anyone to touch me. I wanted to stay safe in this marriage that really was not fulfilling hardly any of my needs. And I was burying all this alive. I didn't even know that I was doing, it was like I was sleepwalking for, I would say, maybe 30 years. And started recovery and with my compulsive overeating in another 12-step program, doing the steps, but not doing them in the big book, getting down to goal weight. And when I got down to goal weight, and this is my fear, Pandora's box opened. And it was like, it was insane as far as my attraction to men, men's attraction to me. And it's almost like, anyway, I went back into a relapse, and through the grace of God, I have found a vision. It's almost like I don't trust myself. I'm working the program. I know the disease is between my ears, and you know, you come for your vanity, say for the sanity. Well, I'm saying for the sanity, and I do have a fear that if I get to go away, which I think I probably will, working my program, I could walk into a room with 1,000 men and pick out the one person who will abandon and who will abandon me and not just, I'm not saying it right, but so I know that through the grace of God, through staying close to all of you, through working these steps.
Time.
Okay. This fear will, that God has a perfect plan for my life. Thank you.
Thank you. And we have about 4 minutes, so Christine and Jan, if you could each take 2 minutes. Christine?
Sure, I'd be happy to. My name is Christine. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater in Massachusetts.
Thank
Profoundly
you.
Grateful for the program. I guess, you know, these three paragraphs really spoke to me. So in the bottom line, a word about sex relations. You know, I have been struggling in my relationship with my husband, primarily because of hormonal changes and having had breast cancer. And through the step 10 process, I've been able to work it through with another member. And I just had the most compassionate, tolerant, loving sexual interchange with my husband because I was open. Like I didn't expect things and I had a lot of compassion for him because he doesn't understand what I need. So that was my first point, that if you do the steps and work the program, it works. And the last point I just want to make is that, you know, the last paragraph, in time they will see that he's a new woman, and in their own way they will let him know it. So my kids have only really known me in recovery 15 years in another 12-step program and 8 years in this program. And I'm so grateful that they have a recovered mom and that I didn't recreate my traumatic childhood with them. And that is because of the grace of God has touched my life. There's no other way to explain it. And with that, I'll pass.
Thank you. Thank you for keeping it short, Christine. Jan B., give you about 2 minutes, Jan. Press star one to unmute. Jan?
Hello, this is Jan B.
Hello.
Hi. It's kind of strange because I didn't really sign up to talk, but I'm Jan B. from Colorado, so I'll just share quickly.
That's a God thing.
I guess God wanted me to speak today. I was kind of debating about it, but I guess I really should say something, but, you know, what wonderful shares today, and, you know, what a touchy subject to be talking about. And, you know, when we first read this, and I've read the big book many times, but when I first heard that reading this morning, I thought, is that really in the big book? And I guess, you know, there's so many times when you read it, or anyway, I've experienced this where I read it and read it, and then it's just like, oh, it's a whole new take on this. And, you know, how wonderful to really spend some time with it, that this program affects so many things. And, you know, it's been such a blessing in my life. I have a really close relationship with my adult children, which I never thought would ever happen. And they've chosen to buy houses next to me, so they would be close to me. And that's just so touching. You know, I spent a day with my daughter yesterday, and it was just so wonderful, you know, to have these relationships and to be able to show up and wonder what I can give in a situation instead of what can I manipulate or how can I make everything staged my way, which breeds a miserable life. So anyway, I'm really grateful for that. I'm recovering from a back injury, and you know, it's like I've really had to slow down and look at every movement, and it's really been truly a blessing to just say, okay, God, what should I do in this next moment? You know, where should I expend this precious energy that seems to be very limited right now? So anyway, it's a joy to listen to all of you this morning, and thank you so much. My pass.
Oh, perfect timing, Jan. Thank you for your share. And I want to thank all those who participated this morning, all the good shares, and for Laura A., Nan K., Nareya K., Eileen M., and Sherry K. B. And I will now ask Eileen M. to read from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. Will Eileen M. please read a vision for you?
Hi, this is Eileen M., gratefully recovered in New Hampshire. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask Him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with Him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to Him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.